to Chicago, and I'm sorry that I can't tell you. Ain't nothing in Chicago for a sweet little boy like you to do. 'Cause when I get there, I'm gonna drink mash, I'm gonna talk trash, gonna spend my money in the morning. Drink mash, talk trash, I'm gonna spend my money in the morning. Gonna have me one hell of a time till I see me a rooster sitting right in the middle of Ross Street crowing for the dawning.
Ernestine Anderson with Going to Chicago Blues, the first cut on her 1985 CD. Ray Brown on bass, Garrick King on drums, Gene Harris on piano, and Red Holloway on tenor sax. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and it is Free Your Mind Friday. Speak your truth to power. That's what this program is all about, dedicated to you who listen and have a thing or two to say about anything, about the programs that we've done, about what's in the news, about things that are on your mind, about subjects that you think warrant further discussion and debate. It's all up to you to take the conversation wherever you want it to go. 888-874-4888 is the number to call to get things started. What have you to say? This, by the way, I so love this program because we really do engage in peer education here, and all opinions are welcome. We may disagree, but that's okay. That's par for the course in a forum. So give us a call. Let's hear what's on your mind on this Friday. Lots of stuff happening this week and even today, but it is not my day. It is yours. 888-874-4888. We start off with Chris from West Palm Beach.
Eutrice, good afternoon. Hello, everybody.
Thank you, Chris, and good afternoon to you, too.
As you just said, there's a lot of things going on. I'm going to try to stay focused because there's so many things. But first thing I'd like to say is that, or to talk about, is the fact that Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders, you know, Donna Brazile, basically confirmed what most of us already knew, that they were fully aware of the dirty deeds done by the Clintons, and they also went along with the program anyway.
Exactly, the point.
So they knew this, and you're a guy who, you know, if you have pride, you say, I'm going to be a good president if I'm elected. So you're running for president. You find out that this person is cheating, essentially. And then when you lose, you still show up on the campaign trail for her. So, again, I don't think there's any reason for anyone to ever look at the Democrats in a serious way. They're just a joke. I mean, beyond a joke. But, I mean, I'm on the radio, so I have to be nice.
Well, so where does that put you politically in terms of choice?
Oh, I've stopped supporting. Obviously, I was raised in a Democratic household, come from New York, West Indian parents, et cetera, et cetera. But I long ago stopped supporting the Democrats. They're just, again, there's no reason to ever support them. There's no reason to. So me politically, none of the above.
Okay, so we're clear where you stand with the Democrats. And where do you stand with Bernie?
Oh, Bernie, he has some, I guess, some decent ideas, but there's no need to look at Bernie for any reason. As you have said in the past, I think somebody does need to ask him these questions on national television saying, you know, you knew this, but you still went out on a limb for this woman. Like, what's wrong with you? Like, you know, where's your cojones as a man?
And the Green Party?
The Green Party, I just don't ever see them or hear them. Like you said, you hear about them around election time, but you as the individual often have to go seek them out to see what they're doing. But you don't, they're not visible, or you don't hear them either. So I don't know if we have any movements or a political party that I could actually get behind, because I just see the hypocrisy everywhere. And it's frustrating and annoying.
So, Chris, what are we to do in terms of a political choice? If one is in the business of making a political choice, what do you think it ought to be?
I just think maybe I need to run for something in my own neighborhood or something at this point. I don't see anything worth supporting in terms of anybody that I see. Again, I just really want to, obviously Republicans are who they are, but I just want to focus on the hypocrisy of the liberals or the left who are currently crying about Russia, 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 but yet your candidate of choice is doing the same thing you're accusing Russia of doing. And yet there's no proof about Russia, but we have tons of evidence about you.
We're laughing. We know this isn't funny, but it is just
exactly
so ironic. It is so ironic and frustrating that we have to find some way to deal with the pressure of knowing the crazy position that we're in and that the country is in, because mm-hmm. there seems to be no safe haven for somebody who just wants to feel comfortable about the idea of participating in this process of democracy and feeling good about it.
Correct. And also real quick before I go and let the next person get on, I did want to say the Clintons, they're tied, obviously we know about their financial situation, but also they're very closely tied to a lot of these pedophiles as well. So I think that's another angle that people really need to start focusing on as well.
Well, yes, a lot of things are going to be happening. People are closing in on them. I'm concerned that we are seeing much more of Hillary than Bill. I suspect he's not doing too well health-wise.
That's what I'm thinking.
It's going to be closing in on them pretty soon. And not only from within the United States, but other countries are also closing in. So we'll see.
Yes,
we'll just
they
wait
are.
And see.
Sorry,
Chris,
ahead.
It was a delight to talk with you, and I'm so glad you got us started today. West Palm Beach rules today. Thank you.
All right, you three. Thank you. Have a good one.
You too. David from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
David from New York.
Yes.
And good afternoon, Utrice.
Hello, David. Good afternoon to you.
Yes. You know, I've been listening to all the talk about the nomenclature, the call for different names for these so-called terrorists or enemy combatants or what we should call them. And what's going through my mind is President Bush, that's Bush 43, when someone asked him a question about 9/11 and why they did this to a target in the United States. I'm told he said that they hate our freedom. And I've never forgotten that. And what we should be thinking about is if people are doing these types of attacks and things to you, what have you done to them? And very little is said in the media at most places about the long history of neocolonialism, imperialism, and all the things that are done to these people all over the world. Now, we talk about yesterday, for example, the day before, with the attack in New York, and Mayor de Blasio, I heard, said that that was a cowardly act and all that. Well, here, the United States is doing these types of things every day all over the world, going around kidnapping people, using drones to kill wedding parties and individuals, and even targeting children of people that they don't like and that sort of thing, and involve all over the world in interfering with people's elections and putting people in line and talking nonsense about looking for democracy and helping democracy all over the world, which is not true at all. And, you know, so there are a lot of people around who who have reason to hate you. You know, you rig things as was done by, let's say, President Truman when he rigged the idea of taking the Palestinian people's land and dividing it up and had a sort of a rigged election in the, not the Security Council, but General Assembly. You see, I mean, people all over the world see these things. They notice what crimes the United States has done throughout its history, in the earlier times, stealing Hawaii from the Hawaiians and Guam. That was during the Spanish-American War. Doing things like stealing Puerto Rico from the Puerto Ricans who wanted their independence, and the same thing with the Cubans, going there, taking it from the Spanish rather than giving it to the Cubans. All over the world, things are being done by this government to other people. So people want to get back, and that's why. Not because they don't like our freedom, as is said. Now, in terms of the what I'm thinking, I heard the last caller, and he talked about the Democratic Party and whatnot. Now, here we have a situation. We claim we have democracy, and we have it rigged. So one party, we got a one-party state with two divisions, Republican and Democrat, and they rule the roost. Those at the top decide who's going to run for the most part. And we say we have democracy, which is a total lie, because the average people, they don't select who runs. And then we have this tremendous situation with income inequality. If you had democracy, why would people decide to be poor? I mean, you got all these poor people here, and you claim you have democracy. What is this?
And, I like that.
You know, so this is a tremendous game being played on the people. And one of the biggest parts of this game is a whole system of white supremacy racism, which is an invention by the ruling class. And white people, those who have that phenotype that call white people, they don't understand that they're being played, you know, and now they're being guided in terms of the scapegoats to the black people, to the Mexicans, to the immigrants, and there's nothing ever said about the real cause of their problem, which is the ruling class, the oligarchy, and their cohorts that run the whole country, and they just talk about immigrants and all these other scapegoats that you got to bring in here. So what needs to be done? These people who call themselves white people, they need to do some homework, some study, and understand this system. They don't understand the system. They just fall prey to those in charge and get their anger at people who should not be their target. They never talk about what's going on, really, and they don't understand. And you're not going to learn those things in school. You're not going to learn about the history of the United States, which is one of a genocide. Millions of people were killed, and that's not only in the United States, but Central and South America, too. But, you know, that was never talked. They talked nonsense about some so-called, quote-unquote, Indians sold Manhattan for $24 and change. This is ridiculous. People need to do their homework. You're not going to get in school. So I'm advocating that people start study groups for themselves, that the white people start learning how the system works and be able to do a real system analysis and not fall for the okey-doke of blaming the so-called people of color for everything like the ruling class wants them to do. You know, that's really what I have on my mind today.
Well, thank you. And quite a bit to think about, actually. So thank you for sharing. 888-874-4888. It is Free Your Mind Friday on Lead Stories, and you get to decide what it is you want to talk about, whatever it is. You can put it on the table. People will react. They may not agree, but that's okay. That's fine. The idea is, can we at least hear each other out, you know, which is one of the most important things in building communities. We have to have some kind of conversation with each other. We have to have some kind of interaction and maturity to regard each other's opinions without, you know, becoming negative about it. So we don't have that here for the most part. I don't think we experience that part, the negative part. We experience a willingness of people to make their statements and others to hear them and to react to them. So tell you what, we don't have anyone on the line at the moment. So maybe this is a good point to take a break, and we'll come back to your thoughts on Free Your Mind Friday right after this. Actually, right after this. Okay. Well, here's a caller. Let's go to this call while the engineer scrambles. E from Edgewater, you're on the air.
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air.
I'm sorry. I was listening to, there was something. Okay. Is it all right if I ask you a question, you choose?
Sure.
Let me lower my internet over here.
Okay.
Yeah, when you were out, when you had the horrendous accident and you were out for the week, they played shows from the archives, I guess. And one show, you said, it's February 15th, 2015, and today's your birthday. And it was very confusing to me and a bunch of other listeners because we knew you were born in June.
Yes, I'm a June person.
Right. So then it went on to, you were beside yourself because they said you were going to have to attend Erasmus Hall High School and start as a freshman. And then I don't know what happened, if the show went off or if I missed up or I got taken away with a call from a call or something, somebody rang my bell. But I missed the rest of it, and I never knew what happened, and I didn't know what show to go to listen on the archives. For that. I never heard the story of the follow-up of what happened with the Erasmus Hall thing.
Well, I did go to Erasmus Hall. I was supposed to go to college, but I was told I was too young. That was the assessment. I was too young to go to college. So I was sentenced to Erasmus Hall High School, and I got fed up of that really quickly, and I kept complaining, but that was what I was compelled to do. And I cited that as a way of telling the story of how people coming to this country quite prepared to hit the ground running are nonetheless discouraged and in some cases totally barred from fulfilling what they came here to do. And it was purely because I guess I was a black person. I mean, I was talking to the person evaluating me for a good couple of minutes, about 15 minutes or so. And then she asks, "Do you speak English?" You know, and I'm saying to myself, "Oh, Lord, I'm dead. I'm dead. I'm across the table from an absolute moron. But this person is going to determine, she has the power and the authority to determine my future and my life." And so she did. So that was a turning point for me and a wake-up call, a real wake-up call about the country and the attitudes that I would likely encounter, that I had never really encountered before in Trinidad, where I lived. And, I mean, this was not something that I had ever experienced. And it took me a while to understand it, to internalize it and understand it. But it was a turning point, and it was a wake-up call, and it was instant education about what it is I should expect to deal with, just as a matter of course, just as a matter of living from day to day. People will make all kinds of judgments about you, and they had the authority to impede your progress. So that was a very significant point for me.
So you never finished going to school at Erasmus? You just went for 1 year, or what was it?
You know, I think it was for a year. I kind of block myself from even going back there. But I think it was about a couple of years, probably two.
That was on Flatbush Avenue. That was on Flatbush Avenue in Brooklyn.
That's right. I did have very nice teachers, really very lovely teachers and very old style teachers. I had no difficulty with the teachers themselves. They were very much interested in the students as a whole, and more so, they functioned with the values of the profession, if you will. They were old-style teachers. You know, I fondly remember an English teacher. It was an honors class, English class, named Dominic Buongiorno. And he would say, I'm going to ask you for your homework now. And you say, yeah, I got it. Or, no, I ain't got it. Or, gee, I forgot. He was a very wonderful and a very excellent teacher. And, of course, years later, when I was asked to come back to Erasmus Hall and talk to an assembly, and this was for parents and teachers, and the first question I asked, the hall was mostly black, a total change from when I went, when it was mostly white. And blacks were just now coming into Erasmus Hall when I went.
Was that in the early 70s?
I don't know. I have to pause and think about it. It would be the 70s, yes.
Yeah.
But by the time I was making the speech to this assembly, I can see that the population had changed completely. It was almost all black. And I asked, I said, is there any teacher here who believes that they're teaching a child who someday will do great things? And not a single hand went up. The teachers did not believe that any of the students that they were teaching in any way would make a difference in this world. And I went off. I was never invited back after that. But I felt compelled to talk about it because it was so opposite the attitude when I went to school. The difficulty that I had was with an administrative process that was totally racist. This woman who was examining me to determine at what educational level I could function. But with regard to the teachers, I can say that I felt completely trusting in their capacity to teach me, because they were quite good. They were very, very good, and they liked the idea of teaching. So thanks for the question.
I wanted to know about the birthday thing. Was that when you first came to the United States that you mentioned that?
Oh, no,
that
I don't know when that, why that came up. My birthday is June 1 and 2.
Right, and it was definitely February.
It's not February.
But you said it was the day, it was your birthday, referring maybe, I thought, when you had come to the United States, that was, you were considering that was your birthday of coming to the United States. What year did you come to the United States?
I don't know what that was about. I really don't. I have to figure that out.
What year did you come to the United States?
I don't know. I mean, I'll have to go look it up.
Oh, I don't want you to have to go through.
Out of my mind. I really
am. But the whole point, my sister-in-law, my ex-sister-in-law, went to Erasmus. At the time, it had the reputation of being a very rough school. A lot of tough girls went to that school. So her mother sent her sister there, but my ex-wife went to Bay Ridge High School in Bay Ridge, which was an all-girls school in Bay Ridge. And also on the block of Erasmus was one of the best record stores in Brooklyn, maybe in New York, called Titus Oaks. And I was wondering, had you had the pleasure of going in there and looking at all the music that they had available in there?
Well, I liked Erasmus, the location, because it was right around the corner from Jan's ice cream store. And that was a very good location.
Right, right, right. I remember James, right.
But, all right, but, thank you so much for calling
no,
in.
No, I didn't.
And,
I didn't.
And taking me down memory lane a little bit.
To the point of other things, I want to just, is it all right if I go on?
Well, there are quite a few people who are in queue.
I just have a quick thing where we were wondering why Jill Stein asked for a recount. I think I have maybe a reason.
What is the reason, in your view?
In my view, I think she was very surprised to find out that the Green Party got less votes this election than it did in previous elections where there were two legitimate candidates running. And she thought in her mind, I think, before the election, that since Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump were the candidates for the Republican and Democratic Party, that the Green Party, by default, was going to get at least 5%. And when she didn't see that happen, she was very shocked to see that the results, and that's why she was suspecting that maybe there was something going on that wasn't really right, and she wanted to know what was going on here, so she asked for a recount. And then they seemed to have trouble being able to come up with a recount, so maybe she's right. And I'm right that they're not really counting votes and they're just telling us this stuff.
Nah, that was an arrangement between the Green Party and Mrs. Clinton.
Do you think they're connected?
Who would not have looked well, I mean, she would not have looked good, I should say, on a political front by being a sore loser. So they helped to fund the recount effort and did not ask for the recount effort herself, but instead got Jill Stein, somehow persuaded Jill Stein to raise the question. It may have been a legitimate issue, but Jill Stein did not have standing. She did not have standing in the issue. And that's what the court ruled. She did not get a level, even if there were a recount, she was not going to be put over the threshold anyway, but she did not have standing. And that is something she has not explained. That is something that she needs to account for, because allegedly she was very much against Hillary Clinton's candidacy. And to be so chummy all of a sudden and to ask for a recount when there is no standing. She didn't even show up really forcefully on the map.
Right. But Hillary had a reason to ask for a recount, didn't she?
No.
Sure,
Hillary lost the state.
She had more votes than Trump, but she had more votes usually than people say, well, there should be a recount to see if she really lost or not. If she wanted to be president so bad, wouldn't she go all out and explore all the avenues to see maybe they made a mistake? So I thought that was a suspect thing that she didn't ask for a recount since everybody thought she wanted to be president so bad.
Well, I thought that the court ruled correctly. She lost the state. I mean, very, very significant loss. She lost. Yeah. And a recount would not have put her in a good position anyway. She lost so badly. And another thing is this. A recount occurs, and this was one of the things that annoyed me about the whole recount effort. They acted as if you just say, hey, I want a recount. Well, it doesn't happen that way. It costs to have a recount. And that's why they took a long time to raise some money to cover the cost of a recount. It's not just one of the things you just say, I want a recount. There's a whole legislative process that has to you have to go through, and you will have to pay, because people now will have to be brought back to count ballots and so forth, and to they have to be paid.
Right.
So all of this was done. It was just a public relations stunt. Hillary knew well enough that there was no hope. She had not even a single prayer that she was going to benefit in terms of winning. She was not going to win, no matter what they did. Hmm. Even though some of the elections were rigged, she was just not going to win. So that whole thing was to make noise about the possibility that she was being robbed of her victory. She didn't even show up to campaign in the state where she lost, the states where she lost. So,
right.
Sour
but she
grapes
was,
and
but she was able to
that.
Beat Bernie Sanders out, and he had all of these great platforms of free education and free medical. I think he was put in the election with Hillary not only to give her somebody to run with, because she had the superdelegates. I don't know, did she do extra credit report or something in school? She got superdelegates to beat him. But he was put in there and ran on a platform that usually the Green Party was going to be running on. So I think he was in there to take all attention away from the Green Party and put it onto him. And the 13 million people that was voting for him would have voted for the Green Party. But they put their hopes in him all the way to the end, because that's when Comey came
politics.
Out in the last 2 weeks, that he had more information, more emails. People were still hoping that she would be thrown out and Bernie would be put in there. So that they took
I don't know about that.
System,
what I know is this.
In
politics, people have to accept that it's a dirty business. If you come into the idea, into politics with the idea that it will be fair and, you know, above board, then you're living on a whole different planet. Politics is dirty. And we saw in this election a level of dirty that we haven't seen in a very, very long time. And the principal guilty parties would be the Democratic Party. And we still have to have Jill Stein account for herself in this business of the recount, and we have to have Bernie account for himself as to why he suddenly became an acolyte of the Democratic Party and specifically of Hillary Clinton. Thanks, E, for calling in today. Sean from New York, you're up next.
Hey, good afternoon, Eutrice. How you doing?
Hey, how you doing, Sean?
I'm all right. I know it's been a while since I called in. But on and off, I've been listening. I have to piggyback off your, I think it's your first caller, with regard to, I guess, the Clintons and the Russian hysteria.
Yes, that would be Chris.
I am so tired of Russiagate, you just don't know. And it just seems to me like, you know, every day you turn on the news, it's Russia, Russia, Russia. I mean, they're losing their minds over Russia now, to the point where it seems like there's a Russian behind everything bad in the world. You know, it snowed yesterday. It was the Russians' fault. You know, we had a hurricane in the Caribbean. It was the Russians' fault. It just seems like now this hysteria over Russia is maddening. And to your point, I listened to your show the other day where you were talking with Charles Otell, and to your point, I can't understand how this whole thing was started, like you said, by Hillary Clinton and the DNC with this whole Russiagate thing, but every time something negative comes up about Hillary or the Democrats, the media completely downplays it, and I'm like, I can't figure it out. I'm like... This whole thing about Uranium-1 and the Clintons involved with selling uranium to the Russians, and all how there was all these back channel deals and everything. You look at the entire media, particularly the so-called left media, they're downplaying the whole thing, and they're saying that like that's like a nothing burger. You know, and I'm sitting there saying to myself, I can't stand Trump. I don't like him. I didn't vote for the man. But I can guarantee you if we reverse the names on that, they'd be all over it. You know, you're listening to some outlets like the Young Turks, same thing. Anything comes up negative about Hillary or the Dems, they're all of a sudden downplaying it because they're so focused on everything negative about Trump. So, you know, I'm looking at this whole thing and I'm saying to myself, this woman has been involved with the Russians before we even heard about the Russians involved with Trump. And now all of a sudden everybody wants to absolve her of everything, but they want to put everything on Trump. And again, I ain't no Trump supporter. I can't stand the man. But I got to call a spade when I see hypocrisy playing out in the media right before me.
So with this view, what are you looking like for 2018?
To be honest, I have no idea, and I'll tell you why. Because I'm looking at, I'm going to tell you why. I'm looking at, I'm in complete disgust with the Democratic Party because of, we knew all along that they rigged the primary process against Bernie Sanders. Now Donna Brazile decides to have a moment of conscience and clarity all of a sudden. And
don't
now
you love it? Don't you love it?
Right. You know, so she decides to have a so-called moment of conscience and clarity and then confirms what we already all knew took place. So as far as I'm concerned, I am totally disconnected from the Democratic Party. I want nothing to do with them anymore. And I'm looking at it like this. Maybe I'm just going to be a political drifter. But I can't associate myself with them anymore because they have proven over the years that they are just as corrupt as the Republican Party, and probably in most cases, and probably in some cases even more, because they play this game of good cop, bad cop. But at the end of the day, what does the cop want to do? Put you in jail.
Well, that's a good analogy. But I also like the idea you said, a political drifter.
What I mean by a political drifter, I've told you in the past, I'm tired of partisan politics because it seems like everything that's being reported, you know, like I was just explaining how they're downplaying every scandal now that comes out with Hillary, it's all partisan. You know, nobody's looking at this from an objective point of view. So everybody's looking at it from.
Is what I was trying to say. I like that idea of being a political drifter. Don't commit yourself until you're ready, if you're ready.
Right. And that's what I mean, because I look at it like, you know, I don't want to, I've been an independent voter for some time, a registered independent, but at the same time, I've been very disgusted with the way politics in this country has conducted itself over the years. And it's, again, everything seems to have hyper partisanship involved in it when it comes to looking at a critical eye at our government and looking at what both parties do. You know, a lot of people turn a blind eye to the corruption of the Democrats because they have allegiance with the Democratic Party. Same thing with Republicans or people on the right. They turn a blind eye to their corruption because they're allied with them. And I'm just so tired of, you know, of both parties playing us, so to speak, as one, I think is your second or third caller stated. And, you know, they've been playing us all of these years, and nobody seems to be able to look through the fog and sift through what's really going on. You know, everybody's just stuck on their teams. And right now, I have no team to be on.
I think that it is beginning to dawn on them. I mean, people are so turned off.
Mm-hmm.
And for good reason, they're very much turned off. And I don't know what it would take to turn them back on again.
Right.
Because the waters, I agree with you wholeheartedly, it's a mess. And you don't want to, you couldn't possibly feel good, you know, participating in this mess, you know.
Right.
It's got a stench. And you don't want that stench on you. But I like the idea of being, as you said, you know, just float. If it reaches the point that you like this party or you like that party, that's fine. but don't commit yourself to anything.
And that's exactly what I've been telling my friends, the same thing, that they should divorce themselves from these ideological parties and just look at what the candidate is espousing. If you like it, then fine. But if you don't like it, don't vote for that person or said persons just because they're in the party that you supposedly align yourself with. And I think that's been a big problem in American politics for a long time, you know, is that we have to align ourselves with people just because we align ourselves with a certain party. You know, people that voted, say, for Barack Obama felt like we have to align ourselves with Mr. Obama because we like him and we voted for him. Damned if he does anything good or bad. Just align yourself with him just because we like him and he's in the party that we're aligned to. And I just think that that's such a huge mistake in terms of how you're going to hold politicians' feet to the fire to get anything done for you. Because I keep telling people, look, you know, I said, be careful falling in love with a politician, because those are the ones that can actually rob you blind, because you're so in love with that politician that you're not going to be critical of anything they do. Now, a politician you don't like, say, for instance, like Trump, it's easy. You know, you don't like him, so you're gonna look at everything he does. But the guy that you like, he's the one that can get away with murder.
Mm. Can the church say amen? Thank you, Sean, for your call today. Thank you so much. From Georgia, Jay, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hello, you're on the air.
Hey, how are you? This is something that I know when the presidents were, when Trump was supposed to talk at Houston about the flood.
You know, you're not coming across as clearly as you should.
How about now?
Are you speaking directly into the phone?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me any better now?
Yes, I can hear you much better now.
Okay. It's just a point. It's just a small, probably irrelevant point. But I noticed when the presidents were supposed to be speaking in Houston during the flood, they had Jimmy Carter, George W. Bush, and Barack Obama there, as well as the father Bush. But I noticed that when Bill Clinton was talking, W. Bush and Barack Obama looked at each other and started sniveling, kind of laughing. And, of course, Clinton didn't have anything to say, just rambling, snake oil salesman type stuff. But I thought I thought it was telling about something that was up with the Clintons. And the attitude of the rest of the establishment as far as that went. I know I hadn't heard anybody say anything about it by any talk shows or anything like that, but I noticed it. I was wondering if anyone else saw that themselves.
You know, I didn't see it. I didn't see the conference and the presentations at that time. Perhaps somebody might have seen it. So I'm not able to verify one way or the other what you observed.
Right. Okay. Well, I happen to see it on Fox News, which I never thought I'd be looking at Fox News as much as I am now, but they broke away from their narrative to go to that. And Jimmy Carter was speaking. He said the most out of all of them in the past 8 years. But I noticed that, and I had an inkling that something may be up with the Clintons, like high school type behavior from the former president.
Yeah, it's amazing. It is amazing that you see exactly that, the high school type mentality
right.
in our leadership. It's amazing.
Right.
It's so disappointing.
Yeah, well, sign of the times. Okay, that's all really I have to say.
Thank you, Jay, for calling today. Okay, Harvey from Berkeley, you're on the air.
Hello, wonderful Utrice.
Hey, wonderful Harvey, how you doing?
Very good, and bless you and your vast Progressive Radio Network audience.
Thank you.
My pleasure, as always. Being a clean energy advocate, my heart goes out to all life on our small planet. And here are four headlines showing what Donald and the Trump administration are doing to our beloved Mother Earth and we, her children. And headline number one, carbon dioxide levels reach 1 million-year record. The amount of carbon dioxide in the Earth's atmosphere grew at a rate of 400 parts per million in 2015 to 403 parts per million in 2016, a level never seen for a million years, potentially fueling a 65-foot rise in sea level. Headline number two, Republican tax plan kills electric vehicle credit. A proposed tax overhaul would eliminate the tax credit of up to $7,500 that is currently being offered to buyers of electric cars. Headline number three, Trump's coal and nuclear threat to renewable energy. In September, U.S. Secretary Rick Perry asked federal regulators to help keep coal and nuclear plants open, even if they're not economically run, and that could devastate wind and solar energy generation if these aging power plants don't close. And headline number four, new scientists on EPA Board of Advisors think our air is already too clean. One of the new White House appointees by the name of Robert Phelan to a critical environmental panel once said that the air these days is just too clean to promote good health and that children need to breathe irritants so that their bodies learn how to ward them off. So there you have it, Utrice. It really is time to divest from the fossil fuel industry because Earth is mama.
Thank you. I wondered if you appreciated the insight of Mr. Perry that fossil fuels really could impact reproduction.
Absolutely. any kind of poison introduced into the system, and fossil fuels also being nuclear, you know, everything that's dug out of the ground, the coal, the oil, the methane, which is called natural gas, and nuclear, it all runs against our natural systems, and actually, I believe could render people sterile. Overall, the high rates of cancer, including testicle cancer. I mean, all of it is fossil fuel related. The air we breathe, the food we eat, the water we drink, all being poisoned by these fossil fuels and their emissions and pollution, definitely create havoc with our living organisms on every level, and especially like recently in areas where they've had like nuclear meltdowns, a lot of animals become mutations and mutant. It's just three-legged frogs, four eyes. It just goes on. And so I think that we really do have to return to clean energy to promote good health, clean drinking water, clean soil, and get back to where Mother Nature wants us to be, happy in the garden. But unfortunately, we're being booted out of the Garden of Eden by the fossil fuel industry, and I don't know why Trump and his administration, I would see, you know, they talk about enemies, they point to Korea, but the biggest enemy we have right now is the environment, the big hurricanes, forest fires, droughts, out of control, flooding. It's just unbelievable what's really happening. That's the true enemy. And the fossil fuel industry, they're hanging on by their teeth. They own the Trump administration. And we got to make a move to divest from them to make sure that life continues for us and all life on the planet Earth.
Thank you so much for your call today. Always a very insightful message. Thank you.
Thank you, Chief.
And that brings us to the end of the program today. Stay tuned. Coming up next, Alternative Visions with Dr. Jack Rasmus. You can reach me at Lead Stories, LEID, stories, plural, at gmail.com. And, of course, we are on the cusp of a weekend, so have yourselves a great and restful weekend, a fun weekend, an uplifting weekend, and please avoid anybody who does not bring some degree of levity in your life, some meaningful element in your life. So, We'll see each other on Monday. I can promise you a very interesting program on Monday, because there will be major developments over the weekend. Bye-bye.